From the Kramer Basketball Headquarters in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, you are listening to the Coach's Edge Podcast, powered by CoachesEdge.coach. Here is your host, Steve Kramer.
I'd like to welcome Coach Lance Maney, head women's basketball coach at Mid-Michigan College, to the Coach's Edge Podcast. Boy, he's got a variety of different basketball experiences, so I know this is going to be a great conversation. Director of Real Basketball, Results Earned, Always Learning. Love that combination of hard work and growth mindset. He's got experience coaching at the varsity level for both boys and girls, and he's also involved at the AAU level. And you know, I always think that this variety of coaching experiences and basketball training can make for, you know, a person who's allowed to help players in many different ways and have a deeper understanding of the game because of those variety of experiences. So, Coach, thanks for taking the time. I know you're in season. It's a busy time with the women's team. So thanks for joining the Coach's Edge.
It's a pleasure to be here. I've listened to a few of these. You know, I'm a basketball junkie just like you, I'm sure. So anytime I'm in the car, long drive, I'm throwing on a podcast, whether it's yours or basketball immersion. Always more to learn and hear different perspectives. And so it's always a good thing to talk basketball.
Absolutely. Well, I know you're going to help a lot of coaches by listening to this. And, you know, I've heard good things about you from my brother, Micah, who you've worked out when he was playing, and my boy, Evan Neff, as well. So this would be great. Let's talk about your college team first, right? Coaching women's basketball, Mid-Michigan, two-year school, JUCO. As you get into the season, what does a college practice look like? What are some of the things that you emphasize? I know this is going to vary depending on, you know, day before a game, day after a game. So, you know, you can divide that up and take this however you like.
Yeah. So, I mean, my second year at Mid-Michigan, I mean, we're 17-0. I'm still learning as I go. So last year we had success. We were 28-4 in the regular season. And part of it was honestly like a little self-validating to, okay, I do know I could coach a college team. And it was, but really it was, I mean, it's the years prior to that of learning, of training college players. What would I do if I had a college team? So I would just think just being open-minded and shaping things to what your group needs is a big part of it. Recruiting good players is a huge part of it. I mean, you can do all the right things and have the great practices, but you're going to need, you know, good players and good people. And college season especially is so long that when you have a great group, you can do special things. And I'm fortunate to have a really, really good team. So yeah, what does a college practice look like? I think I really take pride in like programming each week out. And I think I'm sure I'm not the only coach that does it, but I think sometimes it's like we want to pack everything into every practice. But you look at your team is made up of individual basketball players, and their legs and their bodies are a big part of it. So how can we hit it hard one day and kind of be a little bit more mental with it the next day? And just so each week I lay out, Monday is going to be a high intensity day. Tuesday is going to be a little bit lighter, more skills, more shooting, because I know we play on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So each week I kind of have programmed out before we start it. Obviously, sometimes the script is going to change whether, you know, we need to turn it up or turn it down in a practice based on how they're responding. But I guess the other part of it is every practice is going to have some skill work in it, because as a player, what matters is putting the ball in the basket, and you want to have a feel for that. You want each player to be comfortable with the ball in their hands. So I'm big believer in the more time you can have a player have a ball in their hands, the more comfortable they're going to be with it. So how can I incorporate little skill sessions into each practice? They're different for each player and what they do. But and then another big part of it is how can we get a lot of decision-making in practice? Because if all your drills are 5-on-0 and then you just go right to 5-on-5 and it's like, oh, we're not making the right decisions. How can we scale each drill where it's like, we'll give you the read, there's no defense, and then there's limited defense, and then there's, you know, live defense, maybe we're 2-on-2 or 3-on-3. So yeah, I mean, it depends on the practice, depends on the day, but those are a couple of things that I think are very important.
I love that. How do you go about, you know, I talked to different coaches and they're like, boy, I wish we had a little more time for skill work. I wish we had, you know, we need to get a little bit more shooting in. And I love how you mentioned you're breaking things down into little, you know, points of emphasis and skill development, depending on the day. What's some advice that you would give to a coach who, okay, they got an hour and a half and, you know, you want to do some scouting on the other team for the upcoming game. You obviously want to work on your own strategy, X and O's, but you want to continue to develop better basketball players. And I know personally from my experience, I hated those practices in college where I felt like it was all about our team stuff offensively. It was all about the scouting report defensively. I feel like I was in the gym for an hour and a half, 2 hours, but I didn't feel like comfortable. I don't feel like I really improved as a basketball player. Does that make sense?
No, definitely. I see the same thing. And like, I mean, a lot of my experience before I became a college coach was training college players. So I'm always, you know, hearing their gripes and the same type of thing, like my shot feels off. We don't shoot in practice, or my handle doesn't feel tight. I don't really get to dribble the ball. And I mean, I think plays are great and game plans are great, but really good players win games. So how can we help our players, you know, be really good to be successful? Because a lot of times it's the play after the play that really helps your team succeed. So, I mean, I would just say no matter what, just get the time in, whether it's 20 minutes, you know, to start practice. You could probably take out a team drill or two and just really what's important. So, I mean, we start every practice 15, at least 20 minutes, individual skill type stuff, whether they're with a partner and whether it's based on position, but want everybody to feel like they're getting better each day and each week.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned shooting. How much shooting do you think? And I know it's going to vary depending on the practice and when the next game is and things like that. But yeah, how much would you say you guys shoot, and how long would a general practice be for you guys?
We normally go for about 90 minutes to 2 hours. I think it's hard to stay full intensity for 2 hours, but we'll do it if we've been off for a couple of days. So normally 90 minutes to 2 hours. How much shooting we do? Like, I love to shoot a lot, but I'm also a big believer in, and it depends on the player. Like, some players need more reps. There's other players you'll meet that's like, you probably need less reps, that are more intentional, you know? So I know I was that guy. Micah might've been that guy where it's like, we're so obsessive that we're going to try to shoot 500, 700 a day. And it's like, can we trim it down to 100 makes? So, I mean, it depends on the player. And I try to, you know, just be that voice in their ear, but we do want to shoot, you know, game speed shots every practice, because that's how we want to play. We want to shoot a lot of threes and we want to play fast. So they got to get that repetition in practice.
How often, or not how often, but okay, you're going to the game. You guys, you know, a lot of success last year, building on that again this season at Mid-Mich, which is really cool to follow you guys. A lot of that comes into at the college level. What's the next opponent look like? What do we know about them? You know, you're in your conference play at this point. How much time do you guys spend really digging into the opponent? And then what are some of those key things, if there's any, you know, general things that you try to take away from your opponents?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And probably one of my biggest growths as a coach is, like, when you're a young coach, you want to just tell everything you know. But I've learned that, like, and as a player, they don't need to know everything that I know about the opponent. Like, right. Like, I should study the team we're going to play for 3 days. And I want to give them 20 minutes of the things that they need to know and how we might adjust what we're doing a little bit. I also like to play a style that hopefully they're adjusting to us. Like, we're not going to change right. How we do it for every team. So, but we do want to be aware of what they're trying to do so we can help, you know, slow it down and frustrate it. But I don't think players need to know everything about every opponent, because you don't want players that are out there that are thinking and you want them just to react. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, I'll give them player tendencies. This girl wants to go left. This girl wants to shoot. So we're very aware of those things. But yeah, so the day before the game, we'll walk through probably their main action. If I think it's, you know, a good action that's going to could give us problems, how we're going to guard it. And we'll show film of, you know, their top players, their tendencies. But I try not to make it any more than 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's great. I think that there can be some of that paralysis by analysis, right, for players. And as you mentioned, it's our job as coaches to know as much as we can, but we don't need to regurgitate that to the players. Exactly. There could be something that you know, that you've seen on out of bounds play or scouting report. You don't want to give them too much in practice, but when that opportunity comes, you can still mention it throughout the course of the game. Hey, yep. This girl likes to, when she's got the option to go right or left off of this out of bounds play, off of that, you know, pin in screen, she's probably going to go to the left. You know, like you don't have to mention that the day before 20 minutes in, but that you can say, hey, she's probably going left off this one. Look for that. You know, little things like that where we need to know more, but we don't need to give more necessarily. I think that's really, really important for us to understand. You've mentioned a couple times, you know, the training players and obviously the different coaching experiences that you have. Can you talk about how coaching a team has made you better at basketball training and then how basketball training has helped you become a better coach?
Yeah, I'll start with how training has made me a better coach. I'll say probably my strongest piece as a trainer is just the one-on-one conversations, connecting with the players. And that's really the base of coaching is you have to have a relationship, especially with today's type of players. You know, no one cares how much you know or how great of a coach you are if they don't know that you care about them individually. So being a trainer, when the player walks in the gym, how you doing? You got to make that little small conversation. What's been going on? So that personal touch, has made me who I am as a trainer, and that's something you have to do as a coach the same way. And then if you can help one player get better, you have the ability to do the same thing for a team. You now have a little bit. I can see this player needs to work on this. So how can I get that into our practice? Or can I stay with them after practice for 10, 15 minutes? And so being able to be detailed with it, being able to, like, as a trainer, a lot of times you're probably building drills to give that player what they need. So that's helped me as a coach where I need to steal that drill and steal that drill. How can I build a drill to give my team, you know, the kind of reps that they need so each player can be successful and we're making the type of reads we want to make in the game. So I'm sure you do the same thing. I know I've stolen drills from you, but we're probably at this point, you're making up your own drills just to what do I want to see and what do the players need to experience?
You know, and I think that as a coach, that's so, so vital, because if you have player personnel with certain strengths and weaknesses, we got to put our individuals in a position to succeed. And then from the team dynamic, there's a general style that we want to play that's going to put us as a group of five in a position to succeed. And so, you know, using your own IQ, obviously you mentioned we can learn from other coaches as well, and you mesh these together with the specifics of the individual players combined with the team component of how we generally want to play from a style standpoint. And then you create your own thing. You create these drills that are going to show up in a game situation. And I love that, because that's my advice to coaches. If you want to get like a game action style, as well as like specific player development, reps, decision-making, and you can create some of those little small-sided games throughout the course of your practice. And you're really getting in a high volume of game actions that fit your individual player personnel and your team component, combined with higher repetitions from the skill development standpoint. As coaches, you give like little tidbits, little nuggets as far as like ball security. Hey, when you dribble that basketball and it's below the 3-point line and there's gap help and somebody swiping in, that you dribble that ball too high, too much time. Somebody's going to be able to swipe that ball. Boom, it's got to be a lower pickup, right? And then you can get the basketball out, whatever that might be. Like being able to combine some of those little details of teaching points, I think is really, really vital. What's an example of, you know, something that you've done in your college team's practice where you're like, this is absolutely my trainer hat on and I love it?
Oh, it happens. It definitely happens. It's like maybe, you know, it's the day after the game. We don't play for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do, you know, team stuff. Like let's just put the team hat off and Coach Lance is training. Hopefully, I mean, it's really fun when you have some good assistants too, so you can you know, five down there, five down here. We have like four assistants. So sometimes we'll get into groups of two or three.
Nice.
And you can really get specific of this one girl that does everything out of the corner. So how can she get a whole bunch of reps, you know, shooting from the corner, attacking closeouts? And the more you can, you know, make it shape to that player, that's awesome. I make us do weird things because, I mean, as a trainer, it's like, how can you force them to adapt? So sometimes we'll do, I had us doing like movement based stuff where we're, you know, holding a little light bar behind our shoulders. And we're doing defensive footwork and taking your arms out of the equation, because I mean, as a trainer, I kind of experiment a little bit of, let's just try something and see if this can help you adapt the way that you need to. So yeah, I definitely throw the trainer hat on sometimes in practice, not too often, because, you know, you got to have some team stuff, you know, down pretty good too.
Yeah, of course. Very cool. All right. So it's in off season, you're doing more training, you're running your business. You know, how has being a high school coach, being a college coach, help you with the players that you work with on a daily basis?
Yeah. So when I'm training.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just understanding what's important. Like, I mean, we kind of talked about before we started, but training is great because you got that one player and you can focus on anything. And there's so many things to get good at. There's so many moves and footwork and drills, but understanding, like, we don't want to major in the minors is probably my favorite saying. Way I think about it is just, let's be really good at the things we're going to do a lot. So depending on the age, especially, I mean, by the time you're in college, you're probably in a role, whether it's like, let's star in that role. Okay. Maybe in the off season, maybe we do some things to try to expand that role. But let's be really good at the things we're going to do a lot. So, I mean, it's a lot of shooting. I do love to teach shooting, and I love to teach things that, you know, you're going to do in the game a lot. I might challenge you to, on this one, like one move where it's two dribbles, can we add a pause between the two dribbles, or like tiny details just to challenge you, but we're not going to do, you know, seven different combo moves into a step back, because that's probably never going to happen. I do think there are drills that you can do that might never happen. Like, you're not going to dribble with two balls that are going to help you adapt, but we just want to, we want to major in the majors and minor in the minors, I think is important to know.
Yeah, we'll dig into maybe some of the stigmas later between, you know, players and coaches and things like that. But yeah, I think there's a ton of value in doing things, even if it's not exactly what you're going to do in a game, you know, like, especially if we can, like, just get the mind overloaded, right? Because in a game, there's other things that are overloading, like, what's the score? What's the time? What's the foul situation? Right. What's the read, the coverage. So, you know, it could be something as basic as like, hey, we're doing a stationary ball handling drill, but at the same time, I'm giving you math problems to do. You're not going to do math problems in a game. You're not going to be dribbling a whole lot stationary in a game either.
Yeah.
But I've overloaded you. Right.
Yeah.
I'm asking you, like, hey, what's your favorite color? Random stuff, you know, and this might be a little bit more like junior high. Like, they think it's silly and it's fun and things like that. But the point is, like, hey, I'm having you work on a dribble move, but at the same time, I got your mind somewhere that's completely, completely different, right?
Yep.
And so for us, from a, you know, cognitive standpoint, being able to physically do something with a basketball and control it without thinking about it and being able to focus on something else, you know, you could say, hey, you're not going to dribble stationary in a game. You're not going to do math problems in a game. But the way that I put your mind into a place is just like in a game, right?
Yeah.
Being able to mind and body in different places and being able to incorporate that, that's what translates.
No, I completely agree. I mean, the first time you ask a player to talk while they're dribbling, you can tell they're like, it's like, oh, this is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I think stimulating is the great way to put it. And that's probably another way that being a trainer can help you be a better coach, because I know when I start a session, that first 5-10 minutes, I want the player completely stimulated and challenged. And it's like, oh God, I got to really, really focus, or they're probably messing up already. And being a trainer is all about, how can I maintain like an adequate level of challenge where it's not too difficult and they're overwhelmed, or it's not too easy and it's boring. And I mean, they're paying for this service, so I have to keep it at that level for an hour or whatever it is. And I mean, that can help you be a better coach, because you want to keep your team stimulated in the same sense. And okay, maybe we got to do a different drill for the team today because this isn't getting us going, and just being aware of the vibes in the room.
All right. So we're already headed that direction. As you mentioned, when we were emailing, there's kind of some stigmas from, you know, players and coaches and training and, you know, this unique world that we live in. Social media obviously plays a big role, positively and negatively. And, you know, the positive side, there's so much that we're able to gain and learn compared to, you know, 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever that might be. I love the fact that your feet are in both. Absolutely love it. As I mentioned before, I think that gives you kind of the boots on the ground from the training standpoint, a little more cutting edge as far as some of the things continually. If you're in training and coaching, of course, but if you're in training, like, there's so much new, and it's a real challenge for us to say, okay, this is still what wins, but I need to not only focus on that, but continually find ways to teach it better, as well as understanding the game is continuing to change, adapt, evolve. And so I need to be able to roll with that without getting lost in the mix. I think that's a big challenge for us, but the fact that you're in it combined with coaching gives you a great foundation to use. So what are some of the, you know, general stigmas from, you know, coaches and trainers? And, you know, we'll break down a little bit of how maybe we can, you know, help that in today's game.
Yeah. Probably the biggest, I mean, from a coach's standpoint, is that trainers are working on things that are not going to translate to game success. It's probably, you're wasting your time and money. They probably got you doing silly moves that you're not going to do in the game. That's probably the general, like, fear in a coach's gripe, like, oh, these silly moves, are shooting a bunch of step backs and bad threes and a ton of dribble moves that are unnecessary. But we obviously know that there's trainers out there that are mastering the fundamentals, whether those, you know, those look different for each age, but that's a coach's fear.
So now you're in player development, you know, what do you think are some of the general rules that, as far as like how coaches might, or how trainers might feel about coaches?
Yeah, I would say the trainer side is probably coaches are too old school. They're not teaching the players how to play, or they're probably running some offense that's like the flex and there's no freedom, and or they're not shaping the offense to their clients' needs. And just coaches kind of just being generally old school or not understanding the game, or still teaching some outdated type of things, I would say are the two.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. And, you know, realistically, like, there's some of everything, right? There's coaches in every kind of area, as well as trainers. One of my buddies, he coached like 5 or 6A in the Houston area in Texas. And what he was talking about down there, again, very populated area, Houston area, millions of people live there. And so, and basketball is growing in popularity down there as well. And he was like, man, every school in our area had basketball trainers that would come in during the off season on like a weekly basis. They'd be like, you know, it's spring, it might be April, whatever. They'd be like, all right, this Wednesday, so-and-so is coming in for an hour. And any of you guys want to train with them, costs this amount. That's it. And then the next week, hey, we got another trainer coming in on Thursday after school from 3 to 5. And you guys want to go and train with him, boom, go and do it. And his standpoint was like, I'm a teacher. I'm a varsity basketball coach. There's a lot on my plate. I got a family. I have kids. And I'm trying to look at our program from the youth level on up and seeing how we can build this thing to be successful. And they were one of the better teams in the state as well, so they did a great job. But he's like, if there's somebody that can come in and take something off my plate and teach it very well to my players, I'd be silly not to have them come in. Mm-hmm. And I want, like, of course, I'm going to know who I'm bringing in. Right. I'm not going to just bring in somebody who doesn't know what the heck they're talking about. But, you know, if they know what they're doing and they're doing it at a high level, and I've obviously observed and I've seen what they're teaching, and I like it. That's a partnership that I want to have. And so I just thought it was really cool. And I thought it was like a very humble, but smart approach from him as a coach, because he's like, listen, if there's somebody that really knows what they're doing and they study the game from an individual player development standpoint more than I do, I'd be silly not to bring him in. Right.
Yeah.
And it's the kid's choice. That they can train with them. They cannot. Like, I'm not forcing anybody to do anything. But finding that partnership is vital. I mean, talk a little bit about, you know, that, maybe some of the things that you've done and some of the coaches that you've had the chance to work with that, you know, you found it beneficial for the program and obviously the individual players.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's awesome. And it's, I think it's trending in that direction. Like college programs are hiring, you know, player development coaches. And I think high school coaches are bringing in, you know, trainers and shooting coaches. I know you've run a lot of clinics at a lot of different schools. I've been a guest trainer at quite a few different schools. So I think people are getting more open to it. And it's good that, I mean, high school coaches do wear a million hats and a lot of, I mean, they got full-time jobs and maybe they don't have as much background in player development. So you can get people in front of your team. That's great. I would say one of the other stigmas with trainers is sometimes that they don't want to collaborate with other trainers, or they are like almost territorial of your clients can't train with other people. I've never been a believer in that. Like, I know I can teach some things. I know you can teach some things. A lot of people out there know a lot of different things. And the more different voices, the more people you can learn from, that's great. I consider myself an expert shooting coach, but we had Make Shots come in. Andy Secor does a phenomenal job. He also does a great job of openly saying he supports other trainers and he appreciates that his players work with other player or other coaches. So we've had him work in. I mean, we've had my assistant coaches are great. I empower them and encourage the girls to train with them. Sometimes, you know, they want to train with an assistant coach outside of practice because they got a good relationship. And one of our coaches was a post player, so she's got some good, you know, insights to that. So I think it's moving in the right direction. We're becoming more open-minded. Training is just kind of a new phenomenon or newer. It's just kind of blown up the last, you know, 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my advice to coaches would be, you know, if there's somebody who does some player development and you're starting to hear, you know, their name thrown around, you know, say, hey, come in, do this workout, and ask them to do it for free. Like if they're serious about training, they're going to do a free one, like do one for free. We'll try to get some players in there and I want to evaluate and see if, you know, I think this would be a good fit. And then from there, then maybe you can develop a relationship. I think that's a good place to start. You're getting at the very least a trainer, the opportunity to get in front of some new people, which could help their business. And you're getting the chance as a varsity coach to, you know, evaluate somebody and you see, hey, is this a person that you want around your kids or not? And sometimes it's not. And that's totally fine. There's a lot of crappy training out there. But there's also a lot of basketball coaches that aren't very good at coaching basketball either, right? If you're going to be good at, if people are good at something, that also means people are going to be bad at something, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just the way it goes. And so you got to do your due diligence in anything that you're doing. I want to dig into a little bit of the training piece. And this goes back to some of the benefits of being a basketball coach. When you're working with players, you got an idea, okay, we're working with this player. These are some of their strengths. These are some of their weaknesses. These are some of the roles that they're going to have on the team. Now it's up to you from a player development standpoint in these workouts to put them in a position where they're going to succeed once the season comes around by designing the different drills and the skills and things that you are going to work on. So give us an example of a player and what some of that might look like as far as a training session with them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's going to depend on the level and the age, because I mean, I work with fifth grade all the way up to, like, you know, overseas pro. So, and I think there's benefits to that and what you learn from each part of that. So, I mean, if I'm in middle school, I'm going to look at them almost like a blank slate of this player could become anything. So let's develop as many fundamental skills as we have. You know, can we finish with either hand? Is our jump shot pretty smooth? Do we have clean footwork off the catch? I'm not going to treat them like, oh, you're a post and you can't dribble, or you're a wing and you can't do this. So try to add as many fundamental skills as I can at that age, high school, a little bit more specific to what they're doing, their body type, how they've developed. Same thing, just a little bit more advanced of how can we challenge you to add skills and make different reads of, we'll start basic, then we're going to start with maybe we're adding, you know, a guided defender. Can we add a reaction to it? I think scaling the drills is always great. Like maybe we're starting one dribble from 15 feet away and then we got that down. Now we back it up. Maybe we add a second dribble and we're starting at the 3-point line, to all the way up to, you know, it's a college player, an overseas player, probably getting more specific where maybe we're sitting down before the workout here's the things we want to, you know, really focus on. Cause a lot of times by college or pro, they have a really good idea what they need to be good at. And you want to be the same on the same page as them. I'm not going to tell somebody who's dependent on their ability to really as their job or to put food on the table of, oh, let's work on this and let's work on this without getting any input from them, I think would be a mistake because, I mean, they know their game, you know, better than everybody basically.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, so Vito Brown is a guy we trade. He's one of the best players in Turkey right now. And so like, we'll do a little ball handling with him because he does handle the basketball, but I mean, he plays like the 3-4. It'd be a waste of time for him to work on handling the ball, doing ball screen reads, because he does zero ball screen reads.
Yeah.
But he sets a million screens, right? Mm-hmm. And so for all of his like pick and pops, for all of his slips, for all of his screen, going down into a post up, posting up a switch, like little things like that. And he also does like a ton of handoffs. So for us, it's like, honestly, like, he's making a lot of money overseas playing basketball, right? Very, very successful player, been in the Final Four, all that stuff. But those are boring things, right? Working on screening and slipping and then catching and shooting the three. Your footwork doing that, right? The timing of doing that, right? Working on, you know, setting a screen, getting down to a post up, working on handing off. But those are the things that he's going to do in a game, and he gets paid very well to do it. Tell us about if you were working with a player, and it's so easy for us to grab a 15-second clip on Instagram, all that looked really cool, that was really fancy. But what are some of the things that you work on with your guys, with your girls, that you're like, this is absolutely great for us. This leads to winning. This is making us a better basketball player, but it's also kind of boring.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's like, you don't want it, like you wanted them to be stimulated. So hopefully it's, you know, it's boring, but they understand it's necessary. So that they're still into it. Cause I'm big on like, if we're not being intentional about what we're doing, like I'm going to stop it immediately. I'm like a big read the room, but we're not being intentional. This is like the vibes are off. Like, what do we need to change? So I'm big on that. And I try to avoid like, you know, boring drills, but I'd say, I mean, we do jump stops and some things that are like, oh, like we'll do some of our simple shooting is, you know, the drive and jump stop, chin the ball, see the rim, make the kick, and kind of build some things off that might be the most like, you know, boring type of drill that we do where it's, you know, supposed to look perfect every time. But as long as it's intentional, and I'm sure that overseas guy understands this is what makes my money, I'll do these boring screen and pops every day, 5 days a week, or at least. So as long as you're being intentional about it, maybe you add little ways to challenge it. You got to make 5 out of 7 or turn it into a contest so that it becomes a little less boring, or finding ways to stimulate. I think that's, you know, a big part of being a trainer is anybody can put a cone down and say, do this move, but how can we make it, you know, enjoyable and we're getting better at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, you used the word intentional a few times. And I think that's the key for us to relate to our players is, you know, the value of something and the intentionality of it. Some of this is a personality thing. Like for me, if you came up and told me, Steve, this is going to be the most boring thing you've ever done, but guess what? It's going to make you a lot better player. I am all in. I will run through a brick wall for you. I don't care if it's boring. Yeah. I don't care how many times you do it. If this is going to give me the result I want, I'm in. That's simple, right? Now, I know not everybody thinks that way, but I think part of it is, do we want to engage our players 100%? Like, are you going to have a 2-hour practice and it's all boring? Of course not. But there are times where, as you said, intentional. Are we communicating the value of something to a high enough level, right? And I've done this with many, many players. It's up to me at this point to make sure that this player has a clear understanding of how much what we're working on is going to help them. Do you want to get better? This will help you get better. Do you like this? No, you don't like it? I don't care if you like it or not. For this next 10 minutes, I don't care if you like it or not.
Yeah.
You want to get better? You told me you want to get better. This is going to help you. We on the same page? Roger that. Let's get to work, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a balance. Right. That's this balance that we have as trainers. It can't always be, you know, on that side. But it can't always be, hey, I'm just only going to do the stuff I like. Well, if you only do the stuff that you like, you're not going to be a very good player, because life is full of a lot of things that you don't always want to do.
Yep.
It's January. I run Kramer Basketball LLC. I'm going through all my tax stuff. That sucks. I hate doing all my tax stuff. But the point is, if I want to run my own business, I got to go over my tax stuff with my account, just the way it goes. So life is full of things like that. If you were to, last one, coach, as we're getting close to that 40 minute mark, as we talked about, you mentioned shooting being something that you love to teach. And if there's a player right now who's struggling in season a little bit with their shot, what were some of the things that you would recommend them to focus and learn?
Probably the two biggest would be, shot selection. It's hard to make shots if you're taking tough ones or bad ones. Can we get better ones? And then the second part is the mental component, which probably, I think that's the next move where basketball and sports gets a little better with, is just coaching the mental side, the sports psychology, because two different players could have the same skill set, but one has a stronger mental, in game. When things get crazy, they're going to have a ton more success. So how can we help players with the mental part of the game? It's probably the most undertaught, in my opinion. So I would try to develop a plan mentally. What are we doing in games? If I miss a shot or if I haven't shot in a while, like having a plan is a good one. And the things that we're saying to ourselves in the game goes a long way. I know I was a shooter, and I've lived the good nights and the bad nights. Mm-hmm. And if you're a short guy that's just shooting threes, some nights you look awesome, some nights you look terrible. So how can I control that mental and try to, have the lows be a little less low, I think is a big part of it.
What are some of the shots that you guys try to hunt down, when it comes to that? And I know I'm speaking more generally, so you can take that, from a team component or from an individual player component when it comes to shot selection.
Standstill, uncontested threes is like the big one. And obviously there's a lot of 3-point shooting in today's game, but getting under players understand that not all threes are the same, right? If an inside out three is better than a side to side three, an uncontested three, we like that a lot better. Standstill, is a little bit better than on the move. Backpedal threes are tougher than ones that I'm jogging into in transition. So as a player, I knew I didn't always understand the differences between the threes. So I think that's something I'm teaching a lot these days is, yes, we want you to shoot threes. Let's be, let's try to get great threes over good threes, because you can shoot a three every possession, but it wasn't a quality three. And at mid, we take 35 to 40 a night. So let's make sure that they're good ones.
Mm, great breakdown. Great breakdown right there. Mental side of things, players are, missing shots, possibly getting a little frustrated, down on themselves. What are some of the things you tell them to, self-talk is huge. What are some of the tips that you give them from that standpoint?
Yeah, I learned some good things from Coach Secor and Make Shots. He had seven different plans for, like, based on your personality type, you could go to one of these things if you missed a few shots. I know for me, I was just big on the affirmations that I was telling myself of my preparation. I know I was prepared. I'm getting shots up the day of the game, before the game, like I'm in the gym every day. So just reminding myself, like, you're a phenomenal shooter. You put the work in, you deserve to take these shots and not be afraid to miss them. So that fit my personality type, just telling me myself those little things. I go to the free throw line, you're great at free throws. Like, just those little corny things that you say to yourself, helps your body kind of relax and not think about, oh, I got to do this with my hand and this and this. And because you don't want to be thinking, you just want to let your body do what it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've earned the right to be successful. That's a great one. No doubt about that. Coach, this has been awesome. We can continue to talk. There's a bunch of different kind of ways, and so we'll have to have you back on the podcast at some other time. But good luck as you kind of head into and finish out the conference play and get into the postseason at Mid-Michigan, and keep all the great stuff up that you're doing with your basketball training in Mid-Michigan.
Thank you, Coach. Pleasure to be here. It's an honor. Big fan of your work. Let's definitely stay in touch.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening to the Coach's Edge podcast. Get after it today.